on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome to another edition of The Orient Hour. We're joined in the studio by Darren Burrows and by Stuart Minchin, and hopefully on the phone line by Barry Lake. And good evening, Barry.
Good evening. How are we?
We're all okay, mate. And it was a frustrating evening for everybody watching last night, wasn't it?
Very frustrating. I watched the game, listened to Ross, and pretty much agreed with a lot of things he was saying, to be fair. It was really, really frustrating. For the first 20 minutes, that was absolutely unbelievable. Really enjoyable, easy on the eye, very dominant, passing the ball really well, popping it around, got the goal. And then, it's kind of like, it's almost as if we've done enough now. And they stopped playing and just let Morecambe come into the game. And no disrespect to Morecambe, I've played there back in the day in non-league, and it's a tough place to go, etc., up north and all that. But, we made them look really, really poor.
They're really good, you mean, yeah.
after the 30 minutes. But the beginning bit was incredible. And it was a really real joy to watch. So frustrating, yeah. I would say very frustrating.
Well, we'll get Darren and Stuart involved in a moment. Let's hear what our commentary team of Dave Victor and Matt Hiscock had to say about the match at the end.
Well, Matt, contrasting emotions in just a few days. It was great to see the faithful back, and of course a victory over the league leaders Newport County. And then a few days later we hear that London going into the third tier, and disappointment after a long journey north to Morecambe.
Yeah, absolutely. Contrasting, as you say. It was great to have the fans back on Saturday, wasn't it? Great to have the league leaders in town, and Orient, what a comeback that was. Went a goal down, but responded perfectly, and just showed they can compete with the teams up the top of the division. But tonight, very different story. Come away frustrated, I guess, with the first half hour, which Orient dominated in possession, but just struggled to build after getting the early lead. Morecambe fought their way back into the game, and second half, Orient just couldn't win those battles and have come away with nothing.
As you say, it started so brightly, and it was a special move that set up Dan Johnson.
Yeah, Wilkinson always involved, isn't he, on that right hand side, a real handful the way he cuts in. But it was a pass into the path of Hector Kipriano, who put it back across the face of goal, and Danny Johnson doing what Danny Johnson's done all campaign. His movement was superb, got across the marker and finished it extremely well. 15 goals for him now.
Derek Adams' side have a good record at home, and you can see why. They just grind out results, don't they?
Yeah, he looks organised throughout, didn't they? And particularly when they got on level terms, they just stopped up the tempo, started winning those second balls, and Orient just couldn't stamp their authority on the game, particularly last half hour. You couldn't really see where the equaliser was coming from.
And Leighton Orient needed to be better for both the goals conceded.
Yeah, particularly the second one reminded me very similar to the goal conceded at Cambridge, a ball straight down the middle where the midfielder's just able to find that space and room, and all the time in the world to pick his spot. I'm sure Ross Embleton will focus on that, particularly after this one.
And some difficult games coming up, Crawley, and then of course on Boxing Day, Cambridge United.
Yeah, the Christmas period, always busy, exciting time for the fans. Just disappointment, of course, they won't be around to see the games, of course. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Crawley, Cambridge, Southend, and then Salford early January. So games come thick and fast. Really important period for the O's, and I'm sure they'll bounce back after this one.
Thanks, Matt.
Well, that was Dave and Matt, who had to commentate with Mars on last night, Stuart.
Yeah, a bit of a strange one. Only team, I think, in the 92 that they make you wear face masks. So, yeah, sounded a bit different and looked like Dave had some fun and games pre-match with trying to clean his teeth as well without his glasses on, which I don't think he'll be doing again. So,
that was deep heat, wasn't it, he used?
Something like that. God bless him.
Oh, dear. Oh, at least his breath smelt different, I suppose. That's something. And Darren, as Barry was touching upon, a frustrating evening, once again off to a great start, and once again, Dan Johnson.
Yeah, I think I echo everything Barry said, really. I think for me, what happened in the second half against Newport, where we really won the first balls and then won the game, was done to us, wasn't it? We were, I thought, Stuart, I don't know about you, but I thought we were winning all those first balls, first 20 minutes.
Yeah, and I think it almost followed on from the end of the Newport game, was for the first 20 minutes of the game last night. I think the division is the division, if you sum it up, is no one is actually consistent at actually walking away with the league. Everybody keeps beating each other. There's no easy games. And unfortunately, if you do have spells in games where you're not quite on it, you know, you can lose a game or find yourself behind very hard. I thought Newport on Saturday in the second half, especially for the first probably half an hour of the second half, actually lost all their composure and everything they were about in the first half. And we kind of got on top of that. And that's why we actually then went in front and actually held on to it. So, but yeah, last night was a bit one of those things. But I agree with everything that Dave said, everything that Barry said, and even Ross has said. You can't really make excuses, can you? You can't really back it up in any way for the second half performance, especially.
Yeah, I think, I don't know about you, Barry, but I thought the second half, particularly against Newport, I don't know if you saw that, but that's the kind of battling spirit at that level, with all due respect to the players, you have to have.
Yeah, no, I think if you had the first 30 minutes of Morecambe, that second half of Newport, and you've almost got the complete performance, and then what you've got is if you do that throughout the season, you've got a title contending winning team, because it was brilliant. But you know, this is football, that's not the obvious. The whole thing is all about consistency. What doesn't matter what level you're playing at, Premier League, Sunday morning, you know, the ones that have the most consistency get their rewards at the end. But you know, I watched that game last night. One minute I'm kind of like jumping up and down off the sofa going, this is amazing. You know, the intensity of their passing, the moving off the ball to making passes easier for each other, the work rate. You know, it's just a joy to watch. And then, as I say, then kind of like the second half comes out and you're going, what's happened? What's happened here? You know, and it's a group effort. There's no point finger pointing. What's Ross done? Nothing to do with Ross. It's, you know, as in, it's part of everyone for me. Not just point things at the manager. He's got point things at the players as well. Going, boys, what is going on here? You just looked absolutely incredible, and then let them get into the game. And we could have, once they got into it. Cause, I mean, to be fair, they wasn't like passing the ball around us or doing anything special, were they? They weren't great goals they scored against us either.
No, and I think they did make a point, didn't they, of saying with Morecambe as well, actually possession-wise, they never actually have much possession in any game, but at times they'll take chances when they get them. And again, that was quite evident last night. So like you said, Barry, it wasn't like they were playing football and playing us off the park, because they weren't.
I just thought it's almost like just suffocating you into boredom and making you mistakes. I mean, I can see, you know, on another day, I think you end up smashing them, like 4 or 5. But that's the whole point, you know, and fair credit to them. They didn't give up, and at 1-0, the longer the game went on 1-0, you just thought, flipping hell, we need to get back, we need to get that second, so I really batter them down. But, you know, whether you want to call it northern grit and all that, I don't know. I just say it's just there's loads of positives, but the bottom line is it's a 2-1 loss. But I think we can still move on from it and go into Saturday feeling pretty confident.
Is it a matter of concern, Barry, the number of cards that Orient are picking up? Because looking at the disciplinary chart, it was brought up by a fan earlier on the internet there about Orient's disciplinary record. I mean, what's the underlying thing for it, do you think? Is it just an indiscipline? Is it just, youthful exuberance in some cases? What do you think?
I think it's a good question. I actually saw that on Twitter. I mean, to be fair, I'm a bit of an expert. Footballing geek, I do go on social media a fair bit, and I did see the question, and it's a fair point. So what we need to do is find out what the yellow cards are for, because it's for petulance, talking back, being disrespectful, or are they for missed time tackles, hashtag getting stuck in? Then it's slightly different. So until we can finalise what those yellow cards are for. Because all of a sudden we're kind of like, we don't want to be, you know, known as Southern Softies going to places like Barrow, Morecambe, Harrogate and not getting stuck in. But if they're for like being petulant, being disrespectful to the referee, then definitely as a coach, as a manager, as an ex-player, that needs to be looked at.
I think we have picked up a few, unfortunately, Barry, for that. That definitely has been at least a couple that I can think of. And youthful exuberance, Andy. Sorry, Barry?
Well, the petulance one.
Yeah. To pick your point up on that, we have had a couple.
Even last night, Lee Angold got booked, I think, for kicking the ball away. Well, you know, you can't argue that at all. Whereas Royal Soteriel got booked for, you know, as far as I could see, there wasn't anything in it at all. Now, whether the referee, and again, the referee saw it different, so thought it was a booking. I do think in a lot of games we've seen, and don't get me wrong, it's the same for both sides, is referees do seem to have been quite card happy in games for some of the things that you think, well, that doesn't actually warrant a booking at all. Whereas others, Stonewall, there's no argument.
This crept in against Scunthorpe, didn't it? We picked up a lot of yellers, and I think, guys, it's a cultural thing, if I'm honest. I think it's something that can creep into a team, into a club, depending on the style of management and the style of... But it can also work both ways. Yes, Barry's bang on the money with the petulance, but you can't wind people up and put them out there all the time and then expect them to sometimes not have a bit of red mist. So I think it can... It's a fine line here, and I don't want to be too critical.
I mean, you say red mist. I mean, Turley, you know, initially, just went in with his boot up, but then he left it there, didn't he? And you couldn't argue with that red card, could you?
The Turley situation was just... The guy deserves all the punishment he gets from my point of view. If he gets a 4-game ban, then...
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, Barry, when you get something like that, you want Billy to go in hard. You want him to, you know, to give people a hard time, but it's got to be that fine line, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's the old classic saying, as we're all brought up, well, I was in the 90s playing football, you know, it's all about controlled aggression, and it's the same thing now. You know, we watch a lot of TV on football, what I do, and, you know, you've still got to be in control of your aggression. Now, the aggression these days is basically getting somewhere quick and not trying to tackle and standing up, where, you know, in the 70s, 80s and 90s, that was getting there quick and taking the man and the ball. Then it became in the 90s, we'll take the ball and the man. Well, now you can't take either. It's just getting there quick to try to make them make a mistake. So, you know, when that filters down from the very top of the pyramid of the Premier League, we get to the League Two and where we were a few years ago in the conference or the champion, the National League. We like to see things go a little bit more, and so it's weighing both things up really. Of what do you want to see? Do you want to see people get stuck in like they used to, or do you want to see the model of the Premier League where, you know, you touch someone and you've got a yellow card?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot more responsibility really for people like Joby, for people like Coulson, the senior pros out there, to keep an eye on the younger ones and try and rein them in, as you say, for controlled aggression rather than anything reckless. So does it fall upon them to be mentors out there on the pitch and just keep a close eye on things?
Oh, definitely. You know, it's a walk of life, isn't it? If you've got someone in a different industry, they expect to learn from them, and they're going to teach you the ways. And then, you know, you pick the best parts of what they've said to you, and you go on and do your job. And the same thing in football. If you've got Joby telling you that this is the way you want to do it, you know, he's had a fantastic career, and, you know, he's an absolute Orient legend. So the idea is that if he can do it and be in control, the other boys the young lads need to look at that and go, yeah, I can do that. But then they want to have enough about them to have their own bit of spin.
Sorry, Barry, one of the only things is Joby's got four bookings. If he gets booked on Saturday, then he misses a game. So, all right, he's captain. So where is it right that he's got four and somebody's got two? Yeah, I know it's
playing,
different circumstances, but
in centre of midfield. If you're playing in midfield, you're going to get picked up bookings, you know. But I mean, it's just one of those things. Part and parcel is, you're going to get bookings. It's how the bookings are. You know, if they're reckless, you know, sometimes people see the red mist, they have head losses. But, you know, we can't just keep wrapping people up in cotton wool and go, oh, Joby, you've got five bookings, mate. Well, you know, he runs his heart out for the club. You know, everyone's praising him. And I saw the Twitter thing about him against Usain Bolt. That was quite fun. You know, when he closed the fella down in at Newport. So, you know, if he gets booked on Saturday against Crawley, then, you know, then so be it. We hope it's not a booking for kind of like disagreeing with the referee, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So, listeners on the internet again, they were saying about Brophy. What's your opinion? Because obviously, should he be at fullback or should he be further down the park?
I think it's going to be one of those ones where everybody thinks he should be playing further up the park. That's a decision that Ross has got. You know, but by the looks of it, for me looking out, and I'm a massive fan of Ross and the owners of putting someone in charge like that, as in coming through the ranks, etc. Possibly, do we need another left back in the January window?
I think we've got one, Barry. I think Shadrick Hogwood scored the other night for Aldershot. And I think a lot of fans, and I understand it, are a little bit... can't understand that we've got these young lads on loan from other clubs and we've got someone like Shadrick. Yeah, we used Brophy at left-back. Now, I know Brophy's played there, played a lot there for Swindon, but then the minute we move him to left back, we lose him as an attacking forward player. And I think we missed that last night. I think we missed him last night playing, and where he's best suited to play for us, I think, is in the left of midfield. Mm. Because one thing he does do, he does generally hold the ball quite well for a League Two player. So I think that, look, I'm not using that as a reason why we lost last night. We lost last night because we didn't compete enough, in my humble opinion,
for
the second balls. No, I agree, and like I said about Brophy, I think you know, we're all in agreement. So I'm not going to sit here and, you know, defend the point. Oh, he should be playing. Sorry, it's okay for him to play. There's a left back. There's a reason why he's playing there, and that's what needs to be. You know, maybe we haven't got the trust in the left back if with a slow's not
if
playing.
Had you taken last night then? If Joe Widdowson wasn't suspended, Joe Widdowson would have played and Brophy would have been at left midfield. All right, you've got a problem. Joe Widdowson was suspended last night. So what would you have done differently then to have
I'd have kept the same Stuart at one against Newport on Saturday. I'd have kept that same team. But we couldn't. So it's nonsensical what I'm saying, really, because we couldn't do that. But for me, the minute we lost Widdowson, we put Brophy to the left back slot. We lost what I say he offers us going forward, and not just like I talk about attacking a threat. Sometimes the style of play we're trying to play at the moment, you need players who can retain the ball.
So would you have put Sam Ling at left back last night then, and put Akinola at right back,
I would have been more tempted to do that, Stuart, than what we did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Barry, go on, close off, mate, because we're going to have to say goodbye in a moment. So say what you're going to say. Sorry.
I just think we're in a healthy place. I just think I feel a bit agitated that we micromanage every single result, in particular when the club loses. And I just think we're in a really good position. Current form, we're fifth after six games. I think we go into the Christmas period. They're buzzing, basically. The boys know what they've been doing right. They know what they've done wrong. I think they need to get together, which no doubt they will, and then put a few decent run, another run together. And we'll all be, let's see where we are at the end of Jan.
Thanks, Barry, and thanks for coming along and joining us tonight.
That's right. No, take care. Merry Christmas.
And you, mate. And you, take care.
Cheers, Barry.
That was Barry Lakin. And from one Orient player of the past to another. And Jabo Ibiri hung up his boots recently, and thankfully for us, Dulcet Dave, without his deep heat, managed to keep up or catch up even with Jabo and bring us this interview.
Hi Jabo, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Really, really good.
Thank you so much for joining us. It really is appreciated. I suspect I speak on behalf of not only Orient fans, but a lot of other clubs, and we say that we're very disappointed to hear about your news in terms of retirement. You had a nasty injury, didn't you?
Yeah. I had a unique injury, to say the least, which has unfortunately taken a very long time to heal from. So it just made me sort of make that decision, you know, to call time on my playing career.
Because I was speaking to a colleague from BBC Radio Cambridge, and he was explaining it was to do with the knee, but it was, as you say, a real freak incident, wasn't it?
Yeah, so basically I was playing a game, and as I've gone to score, the opposition goalkeeper sort of dived, and he's dived, but his mouth has gone into my knee. So his teeth have just given me like a bit of a gash across my knee, and I had to come off. So at this moment in time, we just assumed it was just a gash. Obviously, I'm going to require stitches, and because there was like human sort of interaction with the mouth, so I knew like I had to have antibiotics by the time I spoke to the doctor. But long story short, a few days later, my knee was in a really bad way, and I've gone to hospital only to find out that his teeth were in my knee, basically, which caused a huge infection, and you know, put me out for a lengthy bit of time, and the infection has complicated the nature of the injury, and that's where I am now. So, yeah, it's been very interesting.
It's a horrible way to end what was a remarkable career, which, of course, started at Leighton Orient all the way back in the year 2000. And you were a teenager, weren't you? And I would imagine Paul Brush, as the youth team manager, was a big influence on your career.
Yeah, massively. It was Paul Brush and Chris Ramsey at the time that really, you know, I could say, held my hand through it all, worked extremely hard. But it was those guys who, you know, laid the foundations for me and to come and do what I've done so far, you know.
Because you had a choice of clubs at the time, didn't you? Is it right you were an Arsenal fan, but it was Tottenham who were interested in you?
Yeah, there was a decision to be made at 15. Had an offer from Tottenham, you know, to go over there and play. But Paul Brush at the time and Chris Ramsey and the way I was getting on and things, they sort of advised me that, you know, you'll probably have more chance of getting into the first team quicker if I remained at Orient. You know, you're very much well thought of here, and I think it'd be a good thing for you to continue development with us. And which I did, you know, had a great rapport with Brushy and Chris Ramsey and really listened to how they were trying to guide me and help me improve as a player and understand the foundations. And, you know, 2 years later, I made my debut in the first team.
Absolutely. First of all, as a substitute, wasn't it? Back in March 2000, coming on against Northampton?
Yeah, that's the one. And then followed on with, I think, two other substitutions. And then, I think, maybe a few months later down the line, the following year, I think I made my first start debut against Macclesfield.
And that was an important one. Tommy Taylor sort of put his faith in you, and there were so many Orient supporters at the time that they were really looking forward to seeing you because you'd scored so many goals in the youth team, but they were important goals against the Siltmen.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, as a youngster, you kind of dream of those days, and I can even remember vividly now, you know, going on the coach, and I think Steve Watts and Chris Tate used to always be like fellow strikers, but they always used to put me in the right direction, and I remember words of advice from them, and, you know, I'm about to make my debut, I know it, I'm on the coach thinking, oh, what's it going to be like, oh, that, I hope I don't have a rubbish game and all that, and then it couldn't have got any better. I mean, the nerve at ease, I think I scored quite early on, and I knew it was a big game because I think we had to win guaranteed the playoff positions, I think.
That's
like
right,
that.
Yes.
So to go in and have that sort of impact, especially after Tommy Taylor putting his faith in me, you know, giving me a shot because he could have played like a senior striker, was a great way to repay him.
As a youngster, there were so many characters in that team. You've already mentioned Chris Tate. And, of course, we've got to talk about the manager, Tommy Taylor.
Yeah, awesome. Really, really awesome guy. I mean, it's many, many years now. Funny enough, I spoke to him last week as well, which is really nice, you know, brought back the memories. You know, he was a character, definitely, especially for us youngsters. Remember when we used to get called over to go with the first team, we used to like dread it, thinking, oh no, gosh, like you'd be so nervous. But he would be hard, but his heart was in the right place. He knew what he was trying to do and get out of you. And he was instrumental in that stage of my career as well. You know, a real character. And he was a youngster that broke into the first team as well, so he knew exactly what you were going through.
Absolutely, and of course it was those goals that you scored against Macclesfield that set up the playoff semi-final against Hull City. You featured in the second leg, didn't you, Jabbo?
Yeah, I think I played in all of them.
Yeah?
I think I played the first leg, the second leg, and then held my position to play in the finals. So, it couldn't have gone any better.
And the final, of course, was at Cardiff, and it was a wonderful start.
Man, I mean, I think it was the quickest goal, wasn't it? And one of the quickest goals in playoff history, I think. You know, again, you go into a big game like that and you dream about getting off to a good start because everyone's got the nerves and you don't know what the day is going to entail. But we started off fantastically and it couldn't have been any better.
I seem to remember a solo run from you that ended with the ball hitting the post.
I have a good friend, Kevin Stevens, and he always refers back to that. And thinking, if you would have scored that goal, wow, you know what I mean? Especially as being like, I think I was 18, playing in such a huge game. And, you know, I think that was, I can't remember if that would have made it, I don't know what the scoreline would have been had that gone in. But I think it would have definitely changed the ramifications potentially as well. But I remember that. I've got in out of a couple of players. I've got in on goal, and I just flicked it outside of my boot, and it was going in. And it was just something, a groove in the grass that just reared it, hit the post. Oh, man. It wasn't meant to be.
And in the Youth Alliance League, there was a double because you also won the cup, and I think you scored 19 goals that season for the youngsters, didn't you?
Yeah. I scored a lot of goals that season, and I think it was only a week before I played in the Youth Alliance Cup final, and that was great as well. And like I said before, I spoke to Matt Porter and saying that, you know, to then suddenly be in with the first team, but all the youth team, just because of we've just had a great season ourselves, they're all backing me. They're all like, yeah, go for it. And we just played like a week or so before at the Millennium Stadium to go and play there again. A couple weeks later or so, I was representing the youth team and all that we've done that season as well, so they had my back, so it was really good.
Expectations were really high from the Orient faithful for what was going to happen after that, particularly for you personally, and you started well, didn't you? You scored in August the following season.
I kept momentum going, you know. I started and I was in and around the first team and everything, and of course when you're that young and you're scoring goals and playing in the first team, you know, expectations increase. So, and I think as a young player there, you know, you just have to listen to who's around you as well, because there's a lot to take in, especially as a youngster. And I think probably looking back, I took on a lot and played a lot of games that probably wasn't, maybe for my body, as I'm still growing, maybe done a bit too much, you know. So then came the injuries soon after that. So, but yeah, that's the way it goes sometimes.
Throughout your career, you've had more than your fair share of injuries, haven't you, Jabbo? It simply hasn't been fair, and that's demonstrated by the unusual one that finally ended what was an astonishing career.
Yeah, of course. I mean, but injuries and scoring goals and playing football is all part of it. You know, there's so many things that go into the ingredient of being an athlete and a professional player. It isn't always smiles and sunshine. You know, you have injuries, you have setbacks, but you know, you work hard to overcome them, to have a career, to keep going, you know. And I think those things increase the character, make you more resilient and make you a tougher character on the field.
So many goals, some of them are very, very special. I was talking to Matt Hiscock, and he was reflecting on all the goals that you scored for the O's, and he said his favourite was one in the Cup against Lincoln City. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I remember that one, and I was fortunate enough to actually see it last week. I haven't seen that goal since probably when I scored it on the rerun on, say, a BBC Hub.
And what about the other goals, Jabbo? For you personally, which ones have stood out?
Pardon?
In terms of other goals, Jabbo, which other ones really stand out for you?
Well, at Orient?
Yeah. Oh, not just Orient, I suppose.
There's been a few goals, obviously, a few games, but definitely my Orient career, that was a great moment, because, again, I think I was still continuing my run as a young player in the side. And obviously the FA Cup's a magical competition, and it was just typified what I was about then, you know, just dribbling, a bit of magic at a given moment, and it was awesome. I remember an equaliser at Southend at home. I think we were 2-1 down, 94th minute or something, and then a cross came in. I just received it at the back stick and scored. And obviously the derby games were quite spicy against Southend, and the crowd and the players erupted, so I really enjoyed that one. And there's been a few. Again, I think Scunthorpe at home, a late equaliser, I think that one again. And it's just quite good just to snatch those winners or the late winners. Even again, one that people probably weren't a magnificent goal, but I remember going to Carlisle away on a Tuesday. I think it was Martin Ling's first game in charge, and again, if we had lost that game, would have been at the foot of the table. I think I scored in the tying minutes, and we won. So I kind of enjoyed the late goals, to be fair. I had a fair share of them.
Was there a big contrast in the managers that you played with at Leighton Orient?
Yeah, to be honest, I think they all came at the appropriate time, I guess, in my stage of my career and my time at Leighton Orient. I feel that Tommy Taylor was a great manager and gave me sort of like the guidance but was tough love in that respect. But he knew exactly what he was doing to get the best out of you and for you to come out yourself and feel comfortable around men. Because back then, it seemed like men were really men then, and that today is a bit different. And he made that environment very very well for me. And then Paul Brush, obviously, he was my youth development officer, and I had him through the youth team. So then when he became manager, it was a nice transition, because I've worked with Paul Brush before. And then it helped many other younger players come through that I played with in the youth team. And then, obviously, Martin Ling was my youth team manager, and he had a nice philosophy, a bright way of, because he was a good industrious player that liked to play quick football, and I think that transcended under his era as well. So all managers have different qualities at different stages from me in my time there.
And Jabba, you were such a brave player on the pitch in terms of, you know, putting your body on the line. But not just that, we already mentioned your injuries, and I know that often you were playing through the pain barrier, weren't you?
Yeah, especially earlier, I had problems with my groins, and they used to say it was due to sort of overloading and playing a lot of football at a tender age, where maybe looking back, could have been guided a bit better in terms of, you know, in load management in that respect. But so again, if it's many footballers, no one really plays. Any time you're pain free when you probably arrive for your first day of pre-season, and after that you're feeling something. But you have to be tough, and you've got to be fair to yourself. And I've always been very enthusiastic about the game, and it would take a lot for me not to play, you know. So but yeah, I mean, I played through some pain, but for the sake of the team, the management, and the fans, and myself, really, because I love football, and you have to put it on the line.
Jabba, the term sort of legend and you know, fans' favourites can be overused, but it definitely applies to you, and you know it applies when the supporters had their own chant, and you had that one with Jabba, of course. Yeah. How did that feel, and when did you first hear it, Jabba?
You know what, like, it just felt overwhelming, and I'm like someone who tries to go about my business quietly, you know. I don't try and take the limelight too much, and so when, I don't remember what particular game it was, but it might have been, midway through the following season after my Macclesfield debut, I'm not sure, but I remember first hearing it, I was like, oh, they're calling my name and stuff, and I'll get kind of shy about it, if I'm honest, and if I could show a red face, and I was going red if I could, but I mean, it was just an awesome feeling, and sometimes it will galvanise you in a game when, you know, it isn't quite happening for the team, or it's like a 0-0, and you do something, and the crowd start lifting, it's like calling your name, it definitely gives you that extra vigour, and definitely a boost, and I used to thoroughly enjoy it, although it will make me feel like, oh wow, they're calling for me, but it definitely helped, it really did, and I'm very grateful for it, and the way the fans took to me, especially coming through as a youngster as well. And, you know, I remember I used to go from Highbury and then take a bus 30 to Hackney Wick and then walk to the Leighton Orient training ground as a kid, you know, then to play for the team, and then the crowd sort of take to you like that, like you're one of their own, you're like a child of Orient. It was fantastic. It was really good, really, really good.
And finally, promotion came, and you were still involved there, weren't you, at Oxford on that famous occasion?
Yeah, what a day! You know, it was a special day, and that team, that squad of players, even to this day, we're very much in contact. And not many times you go to football teams and you remain in contact with your teammates, and it was a special one between us all. And even today we speak, we kind of remain in touch and celebrate every sort of like decade of it, or I think it was, we celebrated something recently. And it was nice, it was just a magical day. I think, I can't remember, was it someone, we had to watch, I think Oxford could go down as well, wasn't it? So there was a lot on that game as well. And I think we had to worry about another result. So I just remember, I think, was it Steenie's got the last goal? Steenie, yeah. And the players just erupted. We knew he'd done it, and we just let loose. It was just awesome. And to get like a promotion and be on the fun side of football was amazing. It was a nice memory to have.
8 years.
Yeah. To win many things, and when you do win something, it was awesome. It was a really good feeling.
8 years at Brisbane Road, Jabba, and you scored 41 goals in over 250 games, of course. What were the matches that stood out for you?
I mean, the first game for me, making my debut at Northampton, was awesome. I remember just sitting there, it was freezing cold. But every time they turned around to look at their bench, I'd be like, oh, I knew that the time was going to come, and it was just a surreal feeling that I've cracked it, that I've done it, and then the hard work really began from there. And then to go on, you know, I used to close my eyes and always just think about, used to always do a lot of visualization and think about the moment, the atmosphere when I played at the Millennium Stadium. At that time, that was the biggest game I'd ever played in my life and the biggest amount of fans I've been in front of. So every time I used to just, that would be my safe place to close my eyes and just remember that day. And I think that's one of the best days I've had very early on in football, and especially Orient, was just managed to just play in that playoff final. It was awesome, really, really good.
And you moved on, of course, to Warsaw. Did you see the move coming? Was it something that you wanted after all that time in
E10? Yeah, I mean, I think it was... I'm very happy that we eventually got promotion, and I can leave with that behind me. I felt that sometimes as a younger player that you kind of need to go and spread your wings. You know, because you're sometimes often seen as like a young player, even though you're getting older, you always remember as a kid. So at that moment in time, I felt it was time that I moved on, so I won't remain stale or be that guy that was, you know, you've got potential, but you're getting older. And obviously Lingi, and I think that was the best course of action for me at the time. And it was very fruitful for me to go and man up and, you know, spread my wings away from London as well for that period of time. It was really good for me and my mindset.
And what about the future now, Jabbo? Your career's come to that unfortunate end. So do you want to stay in the game? You looking to coach?
I mean, at the moment, I'm already sort of working at a football club now and learning behind the scenes, etc. I've got a lot to give, I feel, especially to the new era of football player and the sort of things that come with it. I think with social media today, it's very different. So I think players definitely could do much more guidance. I think it's a different game. And the pressure is slightly different compared to when I was starting, so I still have a lot to give in that respect. I feel that I'm going to learn from behind the scenes, and then as I do that, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, I can do this, and sometimes I'm like, do I want to do this? So I'll definitely remain in football. Whether I'll be on that touchline, I'm not sure. But I'll definitely be within the scenes of football, whether it's in heading up recruitment, director of football, something like that. But sometimes management, yeah, I think I'll give it a go. Fortunately, it may present itself, I'll give it a go possibly, but I think I need to really study, because when you do stuff behind the scenes, you realise there's a lot more that goes on to it.
Yeah.
And how to build a team and what you need to build as a successful team. So that's what I'm seeing now. And then maybe down the line, when I've learned that, then I can touch the white line and be successful.
Well, good luck in the future. Sure. Good luck in the future, Jabbo. You know. And thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. It really is appreciated. And Jabbo, can I take this opportunity? I think you've played in 10 clubs in total during that long career, and not only did you score so many important goals and put in so many brave performances, I think you earned the affection and the respect of the supporters of each and every one of those clubs. And I know you'll always be welcome, not only at Brisbane Road, to all those clubs as well, because you are not only a special player, you are a very, very special man, and we wish you every success in the future, Jabbo.
That's very kind, and thanks very much. Very much appreciated. It's honestly been a pleasure and a privilege, and it does go so quickly, but then when I did announce it, and all the sort of messages and the memories just came flooding back, you know. I've had an awesome time and appreciate every moment of it.
Well, good luck, Jabbo. And once again, thank you very much indeed. We look forward to seeing you back at the Brea Group Stadium soon.
That was a nice interview, and thanks once again to our friend Dave Victor for carrying that one out for us, and great to hear from Jabbo. Darren, he was a crowd favourite, wasn't he?
He was. He was a guy, Andy, that I got the impression he always played with a smile on his face, always looked like he was enjoying every minute of his work and loved being out there and appreciated being out there. I was fortunate enough, Andy, to be at his debut away at Macclesfield. When I think he scored a brace, didn't he?
He did.
Stuart, on his debut.
Yeah, I remember it very well.
And probably the worst thing he could have done, actually, because we all thought, wow, what a player. But I always agree with Martin's comment about him. Martin Ling sort of said that we were always waiting for him to kick on, and he never quite did kick on, did he?
Yeah, and I think that's in the end why maybe his kind of time at Orient came to an end, because I think not patience necessarily ran out, but I think it was
I think it's a good word, patience, I think.
We always thought, it was right, so next year, and it never quite happened. But you know, very fond memories of Jabbo. I think one of the ones that stands out the most to me was his run at the Millennium Stadium.
Yes,
hit the post right at the end, and you thought that probably summed up Jabbo's career at Orient overall, to be fair. And it happened so soon at the start of his career.
If he'd been able to finish, I mean, not being cruel to him, but if he'd been able to be a really good finisher, say along the lines of, you know, Peter Kitchen's sort of record. I mean, and
I don't think
Griffiths.
He would have been at Orient long.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, he wouldn't have
players
been.
Players who could hit one in two and a half, that sort of thing. I mean, Jabbo's what, about one in five? And had he been, because he had a lot of the attributes you need, he had strength, he had pace, he was extremely popular with his teammates, extremely popular with the fans. It's just that finish. And say, I think the problem I always thought with Jabbo was that if he didn't have time to think about it, he was lethal. You know, if he just worked on instinct, he went in there a bit like, you know, you see the goal the other night for the O's with Johnson. He works a lot on instinct. You know, he's in there. He knows the position to get into, but he doesn't take time to think. When he did with the penalty, he missed it. You know, it's like, and that situation with Jabbo was that if it was a one-on-one and he was bearing down, you thought, he's going to miss this. And inevitably,
he always thought that with Moons as well, which obviously I was, you know, pals with David and still am, but I always thought with David, and he'd probably be the first to admit, if he ever had to think about it, that was it.
Yeah.
You know, if there was any time you never thought about it, and I think you're spot on.
Yeah, if he'd had it there, of course, he'd probably been a Premier League footballer, because it would have been the full package.
And I think, even now, don't we, in jest, you know, when someone has a shot and it's the top of the south stand or the north stand, you get a jab all. You know, that's more of a kind of a...
When he went to Carlisle, he's immensely popular with their fans as well. I mean, it's, you know...
I think his character shines through, doesn't it? That's the thing with Jabbo. I think I'll go back to what I just said a minute ago. The guy always seems so happy.
Well, it's personable, isn't he? You can hear it on the interview, you know. And
that's a good word, Andy. And that's exactly what Jabbo is. And that's why every club's fans took to him.
Yeah.
And the way they did.
Yeah, because he had time to talk to people. And, you know, when you see, you know, I don't have to dig at professional footballers, but when you see them getting off the coaches with their heads down, with their headphones on, pretending to have a mobile phone call, even though there's nobody on the other end, anything except engage with the people who've travelled sometimes hundreds of miles and paid out a lot of money to be there.
It stands out,
you know, and you just look at the difference. You think, you know, take 5 minutes. You know, just go and have a few photographs.
Like Jabbo, who would take
exactly.
5 minutes.
And it goes such a long way.
I think he never took his career for granted, did he? Whereas a lot of people nowadays, they take it and think they've got it all.
Yeah.
Whereas in actual fact, Jabbo never, you know, was always so very grateful for the career that he had, to be fair.
Yeah. Oh, it's great to hear from him. Now, great to hear from another person today. Of course, Charlie Edinburgh, Justin Edinburgh's son, has been doing a lot of work for the JE3 Foundation. And I caught up with him via the telephone earlier on this afternoon. Well, on the line, hopefully, at the end of the line, will be Charlie Edinburgh. And hello, Charlie.
Hello, Andy. How you doing?
I'm not too bad, my friend. And you've been a busy boy, haven't you, this year? Lots of fundraising going on. And what's the latest?
Yeah, indeed. It's been a pretty hectic period, to be honest, without obviously being able to get out and do a great deal. But look, we're really excited of the prospect of JE3 Day this coming Saturday, and a lot of hard work from myself, the group of trustees, and everybody involved with the foundation is really sort of striving towards making it a really memorable day, Andy. You know, it's something that we obviously did last year with the, we had the gala dinner back in December of last year, and unfortunately, obviously, with COVID hitting this year, we're not actually able to do that at this point in time. So we just want to make J3 Day a continued day, I guess, within the footballing calendar, obviously, with Dad's connection with the game and how loved he was throughout. Just feels right for us, as we've said from the start. We want to continue his legacy. We want to make sure that we are remembering the man and all of the great work that he done in the best way possible. And that's about giving back to people and saving lives, you know. So, you know, lots of plans ahead for hopefully 2021, where we'll be able to get out and do stuff and obviously start the CPR training, the defibrillator training that we really want to sort of hammer home and create that new generation of lifesavers, you know. But looking forward to Saturday. It's a shame that obviously we've gone back into tier three, so certain supporters aren't going to be allowed to be in stadiums to be a part of it and enjoy the day. But nonetheless, there's going to be lots of exciting stuff going on. You know, hopefully people will remember last year the likes of Jose Mourinho, Frank Lampard sporting their J3 Foundation badges, and the Leighton Orient players and squad warming up in J3 Foundation t-shirts, sporting Dad's name on the back of those. And very similar this year, you know, Andy, we're looking to roll that out and just continue Dad's connection with football, but also tie that in nicely around what would have been his birthday as well.
Indeed. And a long-term aim, Charlie, obviously, is just to get this law changed, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Justin's law, I mean, I've spoken quite openly on a number of occasions about, you know, that's our end goal, that's our long-term goal, and it's going to take time, as these things do, but we really want to make sure that, you know, we're getting as many people on board with what it is that we're looking to do. There's been some good planning and ideas bubbling in the background about how we approach it and getting the relevant authorities and people on board to take this campaign to government, because, you know, Dad was an unfortunate one. I've spoken on a number of occasions. He was training in a gym where there wasn't a defibrillator, and we just want to make sure that with Justin's law, that all health and sports facilities across the UK are equipped with those vital pieces of equipment, because they really, really can give people a significant chance of survival, as opposed to not having one around, you know?
Yeah, I mean, with hindsight, we're all wise, but it is, looking back, it's almost inconceivable that a place like a gym wouldn't have that there. I mean, I know it's, you know, we can all look back and see what, you know, obviously the disaster that befell your dad, but, you know, you can look at it now and say, that's crazy. How are they even allowed to operate, you know, without having something like that there, when they only cost, you know, a relatively small amount of money?
Absolutely, and look, it's one of those things, until it happened, as I've spoken on many occasions, it's not until something like this happens to you that it sort of makes you open your eyes and realise that it's actually not a legal requirement. I often refer to like a seatbelt in your car. You might not hopefully ever need it. You're never in an accident, you never need it, but it's just there should something traumatic, awful, like what happened to Dad occurs, it's there, and it gives that person the best possible chance, you know. So for us, hindsight's a wonderful thing. Dad, yeah, could have potentially been here with us still now, should he have had one of those available to him. But
yeah, look, I mean, frustrating, Charlie, because obviously in his case, of course, to all intents and purposes, a physically fit man, you know, as regards, you know, training every day with the players, etc., etc., you know, so in his case, probably more likely than some other people, perhaps. So it's very frustrating for you, obviously, to see this. But is there a thing called a duty of care that gyms, you know, should have, you know, legally or morally had to their clients?
Well, I think, look, there's different levels, isn't there? You've got some really huge gym organisations, and then you've got some privately sort of run gyms. And I think, look, stripping it all back, at the end of the day, any professional environment, whether that's sporting, whether that's your normal day-to-day workplace, there should be the resources, the tools and the training there to I guess be able to deal with a tragic event like that, you know, and give that person the best possible chance. So the answer to your question, there probably is. Whether or not the gym that Dad was training at that point in time had the trained staff, the relevant equipment, that's a different story. But for us, we just want to, as we've always continued to do since we've lost Dad, remain positive. We feel that JE3 Day on Saturday again is going to be another really, really poignant day for us as a family, as a foundation, which people can get involved with. And as I've openly said always, you know, we are very, very grateful for everybody that's continued to support us, not just with donations, but with, you know, whether it's sharing an Instagram post or tweeting a message of support to myself and my family. It really, really does go a long way. And we just want to make sure that, for me, the positive I take out of this year, Andy, is we've come out of the back of this year and we've still made a huge lot of headway without being able to do a great deal. And I'm really, really excited and ambitious about what the next year holds for the foundation. And we really, really hope that Saturday is the sort of springboard to take us into new year with, you know, a real bit of momentum behind us so that we can go about the work that we want to do and, as I say, save people's lives.
Excellent, Charlie. And in closing, mate, how do people donate on the weekend if they wish to?
There's plenty of ways. Listen, there'll be badges that you can buy from our website. There's our Just Giving page that people can donate to. All of this information can be found again through our social media platforms on Twitter and Instagram at JE3 Foundation and our website www.je3foundation.com.
Excellent, Charlie. Good luck on the weekend, my friend, and we'll speak soon.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, Andy.
Ta-da. Bye-bye.
Well, that was Charlie Edinburgh, who's done a fantastic job and a son that any dad could be proud of, I think, lads.
Totally, absolutely, yeah.
Yep. Now, we've had some sad news in while we're on the air that Gary Day, one of the club's stewards, has passed away today. So, obviously, thoughts very much towards his family and his close friends. That's sad news indeed. Also, from the Lowdown podcast, Julian Fernie's in hospital battling COVID, so we do wish him all the best there. I'm sure he'll get through it, but lots of love to you, Julian. I hope you get better soon. Get yourself out of that hospital. Crawley, up next, John Yems, a man who used to work with, very nice guy. Crawley, predictions, Darren?
I think we'll win 1-0.
You do? And Stuart?
3-1.
I'm going for a stalemate, 1-1. And that is it for this week, folks. We won't be back at Brisbane Road for a while, will we? But we'll leave you with the theme tune, Brisbane Road, and Steve White and Wright and the Protest Family. Have a great week, everybody.
This ain't up to pump, it's Brisbane Road. It ain't White Hart Lane, that's the wrong postcode. It ain't Stamford Bridge, this is E10. And you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. Cause there's flats in every corner of the ground. You can get your kids in just £5. Get an Orienteer, it's only a quid. This ain't up to pop, Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane, that's the wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge, this is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. We had an inmate up 78, we had John Sear, that is most irate, we were club reviler, but we don't care. Shirtsley and Chris Tate's hair. I remember the moment that Lee Spill scored. I remember it's done on the message board. I remember the pleasure, I remember the pain, and I wanna hear rocking all over the world again. This ain't Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road. It ain't White Hart Lane, that's the wrong postcode. It ain't Stamford Bridge, this is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again.